during this signaling period and the BIP-110 movement happening, we might see a chain split.
If you're listening to this and you are not running a node, then you should ask yourself a question. Do you truly have control?
Running knots alone doesn't prevent these transactions being broadcast throughout the network, but it might be a way to signal discontent with what Core has done.
There's transactions, Bitcoin transactions happening every day. If more people would do that, then block space would be utilized for monetary use.
Whether you're for BIP-110 or against it, at least you can see at the end of the day, I'm making my own decision based off my own interpretation.
Today on the show, I have two of our very own at the Bitcoin Way, Barrett and Kyle. These two fall on different sides of the knots versus core BIP-110 debate, but agree on many of the fundamentals. We are all Bitcoin monetary maximalists, so you don't have to worry about any of us being spammers or scammers. But this is the most cordial discussion and most entertaining and informative discussion of this debate I think anyone has ever put out. So make sure you tune in, pay close attention. You're going to learn a lot. And hopefully at the end, you have the information you need to decide what implementation do you want to run. And of course, most importantly, make sure that you're running a node. Enjoy my conversation with Barrett and Kyle. Hey everyone, like I said in the intro, I have Barrett and Kyle here. Gents, this is going to be a fun conversation. I'm going to navigate this as well as I can. It's going to be a little complicated, a little bit messy, but the goal of this, as we've discussed offline, is really just for this to be an incredible educational resource for many people who are trying to figure out, what do I do moving forward? Run core, knots? What about BIP-110? What does all of it mean? So we're going to try to make this as non-technical as possible. I did say in the intro, but I'm going to reiterate, we are all Bitcoin monetary maximalists here. So this is not like none of us are spam apologists or anything like that, but we want to take a nuanced perspective as we look at this stuff. So Kyle, you have done a lot of the background work on this episode here. Why don't you walk us through how we got to this op-return debate, the core versus knots, all the fighting that we see online? Where did this all begin?
First, I think we should talk about op-return and how that came about, because that leads into this conversation with BIP-110. So op-return was first introduced in 2014 with a 40-byte limit. And the whole purpose of this was to mark an output as unspendable. And so because it's unspendable, the nodes can throw it away and prune it. And so it was created as a small, safe place to put non-monetary data so people cannot store data into the UTXO set. Because the UTXO set is basically a giant database of all the unspent coins. And if there's transactions in there that are stored in your RAM that bloat it up, it means your node has to store more and more data. And so if that data cannot be pruned, or that transaction cannot be pruned because of that data, then the database that your node has to hold keeps growing forever. So the whole purpose is to keep unnecessary data out of that, out of the UTXO set. And then a year later in 2015, it was raised to 80 bytes. And then in 2016, it was raised to 83 bytes. And so since 2016, we've had pretty much a standard where the default was 83 bytes. And then that allowed node operators to, if they wanted to, they could always change that setting and restrict that to a lower amount or increase it to a higher amount if they wanted to. So that worked fine for a decade, pretty much, until inscriptions arrived in late 2022. So that's when the ordinals came around. That's when we had inscriptions, and they bypassed op-return entirely. Because instead of putting that data into the prunable output, the op-return, it started to stuff arbitrary things like images, videos, text into the taproot witness. And so that piece of the transaction holds a proof of what you're authorized to spend, like signatures and scripts. And that was introduced by SegWit in 2017. But I think an important thing to mention here is that that witness data gets a 75% fee discount because of SegWit. So for every byte of data or witness data, it costs a quarter to put it in. And that discount was designed to encourage moving the signatures and scripts into the witness, not to make it cheap to store images or videos and things like that. So for example, if you had a 4 megabyte witness block, that would cost the same in fees as a 1 megabyte of normal data, but it takes 4 times as much data on the node operators. So the inscriptions basically exploit that. And there have been people that have talked about this for a while. This has been a debate for quite some bit. For example, Blockstream's director of research, Andrew Polstra, he posted to the Bitcoin Dev mailing list, and he said data storage is toxic to the network. And he didn't see that there was a technical way to stop that. And with the data carrier size of being able to limit or change how much the op return is for your specific node, in mid-2023, it was basically deprecated. So they added a code change to basically say that it only covers script pubkey, which basically excludes witness data. And before that change, you could say that that setting covered all data. But after that, it says that it only covers for op return. That's basically the main story from the data carrier size and how we got to that point up until around 2023, 2025, and 2024, that period. Bert, do you want to chime in on what happened after that?
Yeah, I think it's first very important to distinguish between consensus, so what is possible on the nodes itself, versus mempool policy. If you look at mempool policy, which is basically if you transact and you send a transaction out onto the network, it goes into this basically waiting pool of transactions that's going to be mined. And what gets into the pool that is determined by all the nodes on the network. But there are also consensus rules, and that's what's actually possible to get into the block. So those are two different things. You got the space where you're waiting for something to get into the block, and you've got what is actually going to get into the block. And there's consensus rules for what can get into the block, and there is, let's say, rules that you can determine on your own node with regards to what you want to be in the waiting area before it hits the block. And that's a very, very, very important thing to distinguish here, because in the discussions that we had, let's say up until we are now here in this BIP110 area, was mostly about the mempool policy part, where indeed, you know, there was a relaxation of the limit, what can actually be in this waiting ground. And the reason for this is because people can actually put something straight into the blocks, going straight to miners. And that is already happening at mass scale. We've got some very, let's say, not so nice miners, in my opinion, in the US that are letting people just sideload stuff within the consensus limits onto the Bitcoin blockchain. And that's purely determined on consensus.
Okay, so maybe if I could simplify, well, I want you guys to correct me where I might be wrong, because I am by far the least technical person on this call. So when you send a Bitcoin transaction, there are different places where you can place data, is maybe a simplified way of thinking of it. The UTXO set, though, is required for you to run a node, and that lives in memory, and eventually you run out of space. And so you need to be able to verify spendable transactions very quickly. And so if arbitrary data, we'll call it images, videos, to Kyle's point, are bloating the UTXO set, then you have this problem that you run out of space. It becomes harder to run a node. Op return is sort of a compromise. We know people are going to have metadata or something that they might want to put into a transaction that you can then prune from your node. So it's not bloating the UTXO set. It's not taking up that space. I'm sure something I said, was that directionally correct? Even if maybe I spoke about it in a less technical way, is that a fair way of framing it?
It's very important to again, distinguish between what you are relaying and holding into the mempool. So into the pool that's going to be mined, versus what is going into the set blocks that are mined. You are always relaying in the current situation the nodes that have actually been mined, and that is based on consensus rules. Then mempool policy, you can just set freely yourself what you want to relay in your own mempool. And that determines, of course, on the miner side, what they are actually mining. So the node that the mining pool or the individual solo miner is actually running determines in their specific mempool what is going to get into the block when they mine a block. What is very important here is with this whole discussion, again, when you come back to the op return consensus was already on a max cap. There was no no cap limit there. So if you would have a direct connection with the miners, or you would be mining yourself and you have sufficient hash rate, you could just very easily fill your block with op returns, of course, very, very large transactions. And in the consensus rules itself, there are limits to what can be in the block. Now, if we would all be using Bitcoin properly, you know, as monetary maximalists, so just going back to what we initially were introduced to, I make transactions every day. I run a shop also. There's transactions, Bitcoin transactions happening every day. If more people would do that, then block space would be utilized for monetary use. Currently, there's so little use of Bitcoin that there are indeed, as Kyle is saying, very cheap transactions being able to put into, let's say, scripts on a cheaper way that can fill this space that is limited, that is kept by consensus. And that is actually being filled up at the moment. And a lot of people see this as an issue. But in my opinion, the main issue that we currently have is that not enough people are using Bitcoin, and that we should actually, you know, especially if we look at our clients, which are at the moment thousands, they should do more transactions, test transactions, you know, try to do some transaction on the network itself. Because if sufficient people do this, it will crowd out the entire problem, which is, let's say, misuse of the Bitcoin network. And the main thing that we can focus on with regards to using Bitcoin more is that when everyone is actually paying for actual transactions, is that these very small extra things that are added, which we see as malicious, will be crowded out directly. Now, I think we should go back indeed to Kyle's point. He was trying to set the timeline of the op return. So let's say last year, it was changed. The op return discussion was changed a bit. And we went into a discussion with regards to, okay, we can set mempool policy, but that's very easily routed around, right? Because there are still nodes that are, you know, running different mempool policies. These miner operators are still allowing everything in. So we need to change on the consensus level. And I think that's when I want to give it back to Kyle to talk more on the consensus level.
I think an important point before you even get to that part is during those periods, the years before they made the change, which really sparked this whole debate of BIP110 and caused it to spark that proposal for BIP110, is the Core V30. And the Core V30, basically, before that, the default for the op return was 83 bytes on the nodes. So you can think that majority of nodes, people that are not checking their configuration, they just run it as whatever the defaults are, they get 83 bytes. And then with Core V30, that changed it to the, as Bert said, it is possible to make your op return limit basically unlimited. And so they basically in V30 changed it so that the default is unlimited. And so we can think that the most people that when they upgrade to V30, they're not going to change the configuration. Let's say most people would not if they're just going to run the defaults. And so those nodes are running with this uncapped version where basically anything can be stored on their mempool. So images or whatever that gets stored. And obviously, as Bert was saying, that the filters get routed around. And because, you know, let's say I have a very conservative node, Michael has a conservative node, but Bert and some other people don't. They have a more liberal mempool policy. Then maybe I don't get in my mempool images or whatever, but maybe Bert does. Or even in the case like Bert was saying about certain miners, you can just submit the transaction straight to the miner and bypass the nodes in general in terms of relaying that transaction and get it into a block. And so the whole purpose of BIP110 is basically saying, okay, well, if the filters are just going to get routed around, then we will just have to implement it into consensus. And that's really where the whole debate came from. And one thing I'd say that I think is really important is that the miner just gets paid once, but the node operator, everyone has to store that data forever. And so if we don't make a stand of, you know, in terms of what are we willing to store on our nodes, because it's our property, and in 20, 30 years, will it become prohibitively expensive, both from a hardware cost and just from data cost and all that, for people to run their own full nodes, full archival nodes? And are people going to have to be forced to use, like a prune node or trust someone else's node to give them the blockchain state?
Yeah, I see that a little bit differently because we have this consensus limit already where we have this 4 megabyte block size. So already there is a cap limit that is already hard enforced. And indeed, what we are really discussing here on the consensus change is what can actually get into the node. And just to come back 1 second to the mempool, you mentioned if you're on the mempool policy running different policies, you're actually not storing it yet. You're just temporarily holding that on your node. And then when the block is actually mined, that is what actually is settled. So we did a very nice thing, Kyle, if you remember, where you were running knots, I was running core. And core is actually capable of doing sub 1 sat per virtual byte transactions. So if Kyle looks at his mempool, you can see it live on, and very nicely visualized. If you run a node, you can see exactly what is waiting to be mined on your node itself. And if you run knots, that's a very empty mempool. And if you run core and you have relaxed limits and you run basically a very free node where you accept everything, you will see a lot of transactions there. And you can also go sub one, so lower than 1 satoshi per virtual byte on that core, and then relay it through the network. And once that block is actually mined with the sub one, it will actually also be embedded on Kyle's node, which is the knots node. And that's currently the case. Now, when you start to go on the consensus level, which BIP110 is, there are a lot of transactions that are currently being embedded in the blockchain on core that Kyle is not going to accept even on his node, on his hardware itself. And that's basically where BIP110 starts to come in, where you do a consensus change and you say, okay, I don't actually really don't want this on my node itself. And that is where we are heading for now.
Okay, so we're gonna talk more about BIP110 and what it changes, but just to make sure that the remainder of the history is discussed. So in June 25, Core V30, I guess it was proposed that they're going to blow out the operator and relay limit from 83 to 100,000 bytes. So basically, you can put almost anything that you want in operator. That was when really the vocal opposition heated up. We saw many people begin running knots nodes. It's not perfectly, by the way, for all of our listeners, it is not perfectly verifiable if these are real individuals, if these are virtual machines, bots. You can't know that for certain. One comment I'll make is it seems to be something of a grassroots movement. I had Matt Hill on the podcast recently, or his episode might be coming out after this, actually. But one of the things he talked about was actually showing some of their revenues. They started selling a lot of nodes afterwards, indicating that there were a lot of people who maybe were discontented with the core move to blow out the operator limit in order to start running a node for maybe the first time, and presumably to some degree running knots. So his point was a lot more nodes actually are coming online. It doesn't seem evident that it's at least not all virtual machines. Any comments on the controversy around the operator limit being removed? And then that, I guess that took effect. Was that the October 10th? That was the big move. Yeah. Core V30 came in out. October, everyone blamed the price crash.
Yeah, October 10th was when V30 came out, but the actual PR that you're mentioning, where it moved from 83 bytes to 100,000, was in June. And there was a lot of community backlash because in that PR as well, they basically deprecated data carrier size. So it doesn't really matter whether you choose to restrict it or not, because now the default would be basically uncapped. And so when you're sending it through the network and there's other nodes that just accept the uncapped version, then it doesn't really matter because they can either do that or they could just send it to the miner, and then the miner can just put it in the block and then you have to store it forever. And so the other thing that I think is also important to mention is that this BIP110 is temporary. So it only lasts for 1 year and then it expires automatically. So I don't think any other people within the spec itself of BIP110, it doesn't stop spam. It doesn't, this isn't like the end goal, but it's a way to give us time to figure out from a long-term perspective, how are we going to solve this problem?
So would it be fair to say then running knots is a philosophical stance? Because those transactions with the arbitrary data are still going to be routed either directly to a miner, something like Slipstream, for example, or through the peer-to-peer network, because many people are going to be running Core V30 or have changed data carrier size to allow these larger op-return transactions. And so running knots alone doesn't prevent these transactions from, you know, being broadcast throughout the network and for a miner getting them into the block. But it might be a way to signal discontent with what Core has done. Is that a fair way of framing for folks who are, you know, currently running knots or considering it?
That's currently the case, Michael, exactly as you're saying. But now, of course, during this signaling period and the BIP 110 movement happening, especially during this period, we might see a chain split. And that's becoming very interesting, because if we are going to see a chain split, I think that's very exciting for a lot of Bitcoiners, because it's a very interesting time. We haven't seen a chain split for almost 9 years, right? It's 2017 when we saw the user-activated soft fork. And that was totally different in comparison with what we are going to see at this specific activation period. So currently, you could see knots, and the knots until 29.3.1 came about, see it as being some kind of discontent movement with Core. And I agree, you know, it should have been taken more seriously with regards to doing a change on the mempool policy. There should have been more insight with regards to governance structure on the Core side, and what you actually are doing on the Core side. I think it's in that sense a poor management, let's say, but the current direction where we see NOS/BIP 110, where we basically have a single person controlling that implementation, a single person who has the merge access, is also a huge risk. And I think it's very nice that Kyle is saying, yeah, it's temporary and we just need to figure it out. Yes, I think we need to figure out how we want to continue on Bitcoin in and by itself. But the current direction has risks. And that's something that I think we really have to talk about with regards to if a chain split occurs, that you know what you are doing. What are you actually running? And what could the impact be?
Okay, so this is where the rift lies between the two of you. You guys, I think it would be fair to say you agree on the history of what's happened. You both have your own issues with the way things have played out thus far. And where you seem to part ways is specifically on running knots, which so Barrett, I'm going to let Kyle sort of run with this first, and I want you to respond to him. But running knots, but then maybe more significantly, BIP 110. So Kyle, why don't you describe what BIP 110 is? What does it do for this, you know, approximately a year? And why is it something that you find appealing? And then Barrett, you get to explain what some of those risks are that you believe exist.
Sure. And I just want to mention something on what Bert said about the chain split risk. It is a risk with any user activated soft fork. So I don't think it's something specific to BIP 110. And if we look in the past, like SegWit, BIP 148 was actually much more like new in terms of what it was doing was much different from today with BIP 110, which is actually just constricting to what we had a year ago. But yes, it is also temporary. So there are obviously differences with that. But I think the other thing is that the miner revenue with the inscriptions of what they would lose, let's say in this year period, if BIP 110 is activated, then I don't really see why a miner would sustain a chain split over a tiny percent of spam revenue. I'm not sure, Bert, if you disagree with that.
Yeah, so now this is becoming a bit difficult, I think, for the listener to understand. There is, let's say, a chain split risk on both sides, let's say, yes.
Explain the concept of a chain split. Explain what that means exactly. So people, I mean, I think it seems self-evident to us probably, but for someone who's listening.
Yeah, so you have very much restrictions on BIP 110, what it accepts on its own nodes. So the people that are running BIP 110, we'll say when a miner who's running Core or Libra Relay or one of the other Bitcoin node types a block which doesn't fulfill the consensus of these knots, BIP110 nodes. That block will actually not be accepted on the knots nodes with the BIP110 activation. So at that point, they will only build forward on their own block that was or has to be mined by a BIP110 signaling miner that is actually, you know, running BIP110 and only accepting the blocks under the accordance of the BIP110 consensus rules. Now, the expectation is that not the majority of miners might go along with running BIP110 and heavy restrictions on their blocks that they are mining. So what could then occur is that there are some miners that do, some miners that don't, and then the BIP110 miners will only build forward on their restrictive blocks, while the Core or Libra Relay or other miners that are much more liberal and much more open to mine everything will just build forward on everything. They have no restrictions, so they will build forward. And then the question is, who is going to be the majority? And that is what a split basically means. We will get two Bitcoin networks where either one of them, let's say, wins the race of having, you know, the most proof of work and most blocks at the end of a certain period. And at the end of that period, it is determined if it's either BIP110 or, you know, the current situation where we are. And that split could mean that if you are on a BIP110 node and you're actually doing transactions where blocks are only built on the conservative side, that you are actually splitting off the actual Bitcoin network and you're in a different split of the network and you reside there with your transaction. So that's why, in general, I think that's what both Kyle and I, but also the broad technical team within the Bitcoin Way has concluded, it might be wise, if you're not very tech savvy, to maybe not do a transaction during the activation period if you're, for example, running BIP110. But also, if you're running Core, it might not be the best period to do transactions because there might be some chaos with regards to this split. And in general, it might then make sense to think twice about what you are actually running and what is actually happening. And I think we need to supply also some really nice resources that we already discussed before this recording, where you can actually see what happens with what percentage of mining rate is actually signaling a certain direction. And this will give you more clarity of what might happen, but we don't know. Kyle doesn't know, I don't know, and the entire Bitcoin Way team doesn't actually know. And I think that is very important for us to emphasize that we can see a little bit of chaos in August, and people need to be aware of that.
Yeah, and I also say that if we look at SegWit, for example, for a long time, there wasn't signaling until the last period. So I agree with Bert that we shouldn't assume anything until we get closer to the activation date and then figuring out from there what to do, because we don't know what's going to happen, and signaling can happen very quickly from the miner side. But one thing I also think is worth mentioning, if the chain does split, people should not be afraid in the sense that they're not going to lose your Bitcoin. You're going to have the coins or the keys to control the coins on both sides of the chain. So nobody is losing any ownership of the Bitcoin that you already have.
And just to be a little bit attached to that. So in my specific personal situation, I run a Lightning node. And let's say that that chain split does occur and I would be running BIP110 with my Lightning node. I might indeed be in the chain split of BIP110. And then I basically disconnect with my peers that are still on the other network. That means that you get forced closures on your Lightning node, and that costs quite some money. So there are some risks for the more advanced users, but we expect them to be the people that understand this risk anyway and would be careful with regards to this split risk.
So would now be a good time, I pulled this up on my screen, these different scenarios for how this could play out. So scenario A is BIP110 activates with majority hash rate. Kyle, do you want to walk through what all this means and maybe talk through what people might anticipate?
So if BIP 110 activates with majority hash rate, then obviously if you are running knots with the RDTS, RDTS is a synonym for BIP 110. It stands for Reduced Data Temporary Soft Work. That's just the name of what BIP 110 is. So in the case that BIP 110 activates with majority hash rate, we're looking here at the risks. If you're running knots and the BIP 110, then there's pretty much no risk there. You are basically enforcing all of the BIP 110 rules, and then you would be on the longest chain. And so if you're using 29.3 core or core V30 or knots without BIP 110, then basically it would be recommended that you upgrade your node. And you basically, if you don't upgrade your node, then you're basically trusting the miners. If on that chain they're producing, for example, an invalid block, you would be able to see, let's say, an invalid transaction on your node, for example, that is not actually there because you're not on the right chain effectively.
Okay. And then if you're running core, like an earlier version of core, core V30, maybe just kind of describe some of these, or Barrett, if you have any comments.
If you're running core 29.3 or V30 or knots before without BIP 110, then your node is just following the longest chain. So you're just trusting the miners and your node is not enforcing the rules. The whole purpose of running a node is to enforce the rules. So your node basically cannot confirm from a consensus perspective what those rules are. And so you're just trusting what the miners are giving you effectively on your node.
One very important detail here, you see that at the top, BIP 110 activates with majority hash rate. If it doesn't activate with majority hash rate, there is much more risk. And that's the next page, where indeed, if you're then running BIP 110, then you get into a fork. And that's the chain split, which we were basically discussing.
Right. And I think also the whole bet behind BIP 110 is that the miners will not sustain a chain split for a tiny percentage of the revenue, which is driven by spam and these JPEGs and ordinals and things like that. And so the idea would be that, let's say it activates without majority hash rate, that if you think about an economic node, people that are using Bitcoin, paying with Bitcoin, receiving Bitcoin with their own nodes, that they would end up moving over to that BIP 110 chain because there's no point to go on the other chain. And like I said before, that this is a temporary activation, so it's not something that would last forever, but it is something that is a trade-off. If you are going to run knots with BIP 110, you need to understand that in the event there is a chain split, you are basically betting that there's going to be people moving over to that chain. And if that doesn't happen, then you're basically on a minority fork effectively. And then that goes back to Bert's points that you should understand the risks associated with that.
Okay. And that's the user activated soft fork. Is that migration? Is that correct?
Right.
Okay. And then obviously if it activates without majority hash rate, all of these other older versions of core, core V30, you're on the majority chain. There's really nothing problematic about that. And so the big question is, which is it going to do? And are you going to be prepared? Could maybe you guys talk a little bit about, if you're a node runner, let's say you're running knots, you're signaling BIP 110, and BIP 110 does not activate with majority hash rate, or it activates without majority hash rate. What do you do? Is there like a period of time that you waited out to see? To Barrett's point earlier, you don't send transactions during this period. Like what should people be thinking about here?
So I think it's wise to not upgrade, let's say, to the latest version of core. It's not wise to upgrade to the latest version of knots. That's actually running BIP 110 because you can just wait this out. So you can be the Switzerland, let's say, in the wars, right? So you can just sit back, relax, and enjoy the show and see whatever is going to happen. And for sure, your Bitcoin is just sitting, let's say, in self-custody. You are running a node. You might be signaling either an earlier version of knots or signaling an earlier version of core. But during this period, if you don't do much, then there is no real risk in any fashion because you're not transacting. So you're not in any of the blocks where some of this chaos ensues. Now, if you want to be at the forefront of the BIP 110 and you want to signal and you still want to use your Bitcoin lavishly during this period, there is this little risk of being in this chain split. And then, of course, again, your Bitcoin will be in this chain split. And then you might be able to call us at the end, you know, I'm in this chain split and I don't know what to do if you're not technical. So we prefer that not to happen. We prefer people to just remain on a conservative stance, watch what happens. And then when that period is over, it's a signaling period that will take a couple of weeks. When that is over, then you can upgrade if you like. But being conservative has always been one of the best ways if you're just a hodler and not a very active participant in the network, which currently most of our clients are. They are mostly hodlers, not people that are daily transacting on the Bitcoin and on Bitcoin blockchain itself.
Yeah, I think if you're going to be running, for example, the older versions of Core or the older version of Knots without the BIP 110, if BIP 110 activates with majority hash rate, you will still be on the same chain. If BIP 110 doesn't activate without majority hash rate, then obviously you'd still be on the majority chain. So there's no real change from the status quo. I think if you want to make the choice, obviously, I think everyone should just do their own due diligence and education on what they want to choose. But ultimately, if you do choose to run Knots with BIP 110, then the whole thesis is that if BIP 110 activates with minority hash rate, that your bet is that the miners are going to follow the economic activity. So merchants, users, exchanges would move to that chain and use that. So the node operators are basically forcing the miners to comply by threatening to reject any non-signaling blocks that they produce. And I think that's at the end of the day, the decision that people have to make. And like Bert said, if you don't understand this stuff, if you think that this is too complicated, then it's best focus on being neutral. Don't do something that you're not really sure of. So I think that's the main thing, that if you're watching this and you're still not sure, it's better to be neutral than to run something that you don't really understand and then be in a situation where you need help and you don't know what's going on and then you're in an uncomfortable situation.
So just to spell it out, the most neutral you could be might be something like running Core V29. Where you're not indicating support for Core V30, but you're not taking on the risk that Baird outlined, which I, by the way, I want to dig into more of being on an implementation with effectively a single maintainer. That's what you would define as like the most, that's plain Switzerland, is running something like Core V28, Core V29. Is that correct?
Yeah, and that's the conservative approach, and you just see what happens. And coming back to the beginning, I think it's very important that if we really want to, let's say, kill the spam and get rid of all this this stuff that is basically polluting the network, we need to start doing this. I grabbed this specifically, which is called a coin join, and people should start to dig into that, because if sufficient people start to run coin joins and to anonymize, even though it's a little part maybe of their stack, it's active use for Bitcoin. So you constantly basically mix coins and you create a growing anonymization set of coins on the network. And if that group of anonymized coins is large enough, it becomes almost impossible for analysis companies to actually, you know, get back to tracing who's actually holding which coins, which is currently the majority with regards to all the KYC policies, especially where I'm from in Europe, but also in the US. And the amazing thing is if we actually focus on that part, you know, privacy, security, and using Bitcoin in and by itself, then we are for sure going to win. And that's something that I'm really missing. We are really diverting into a discussion which sounds quite, you know, like, oh, there's an emergency on Bitcoin. It's not an emergency. That's not how I see it. I think the real emergency that we have is that we're not using it enough, and we could use it very, very nicely by doing coin joins, doing anonymization with our transactions, and then using the network properly, and therefore pushing the fees up a little bit and crowding out all the stuff that we don't like to see there.
I agree. Definitely use your Bitcoin. Okay, so guys, I've got a question for you. I'm reluctant to ask this because I don't want anyone to take away like that we're putting odds on anything. But if you were to bet based on what you're seeing in terms of signaling, activation, growth of knots, online discourse, all of these variables, what do you think is going to happen during this activation period? And no one should take this as like, you know, a crystal ball. But I'm curious if you guys have any.
I don't know. Michael, I don't know. This is the amazing thing. I don't know. And you have to be honest if you don't know, right? Like, I'm also just trying to put it in the right words. So for the general public, and I think Kyle is doing it exactly the same from his perspective. I'm doing it from my perspective. But in general, I don't know what exactly is going to happen. And that's also why I think it's wise to not be at the forefront with maybe some transactions going into a chain split. You know, if you are not 100% sure what is going to happen there. And I think the people that are saying, I know 100% sure what's going to happen, you have to be careful with that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
we've seen a lot of people promising a lot of stuff in Bitcoin before. And that turned out, in general, quite risky.
Yeah, I agree. I think, like you said, I don't think anybody knows. And I think, for sure, both on the side of if you're overconfident on BitPoint 10, but also on the other side, if you're overconfident that BitPoint 10, that it will just go away. This is similar to how we got here in the first place, where when they merged these controversial changes, and they just think, you know, people are just going to have to deal with it. And then it turns out, well, no, people are not just going to deal with it. They're going to come up with solutions to that problem, which maybe are not perfect, but there is a significant amount of people who are not just going to go along with it. But I agree completely that nobody really knows what's going to happen. I see a lot of times people look at the signaling numbers, but SegWit had near zero signaling for months before there was a big change right beforehand. And then that caused the BIP 148 to go through. And I think personally that the temporary nature of BIP 110 limits the downside in both directions, so that if for whatever reason this is not the path forward, then it auto expires in 1 year. And to me, that's I personally run BIP 110 because I think Bitcoin is money and it should only be used for money, and we should make a stand for that. But I definitely understand Bert's point of view and other people that are skeptical or do not want to run knots or BIP 110. Another thing I also just wanted to mention, just for clarification, is that from, let's say, call it a neutral perspective, if you're not if you don't want to run BIP 110, you don't necessarily have to run core, like the older versions. You could also run an older version of knots if you still have that philosophical understanding of I don't want to store spam on my node, but I also don't want to bring it at a consensus level. And I think it goes back to Michael's question about philosophically, if you're running knots, you are basically saying, I don't want to store spam, Scott, on my node. And BIP 110 is just going a step further and saying, I don't think at a network level, at least for a year, there should be anyone, any node storing this data.
Okay. So we've been talking a lot about BIP 110 and the possibility of activation. Let's dig in a little bit further on what exactly it does at the consensus level. Kyle, you shared 7 rules would change at the consensus level if BIP 110 were to activate. Could you walk through, I'm looking at these and I'm like, okay, I can sit down and think about this really hard, maybe kind of grasp it, but try to make this as non-technical as possible. Could you walk through these and then Barrett interject throughout as you, you know, and by the way, so I know, so as someone who is signaling BIP 110, Kyle, you're going to probably frame these in a more positive light. Barrett, you've got concerns about this not being the solution. So maybe you interject with some of your issues with any of these.
Yeah, sure. We'll just go through one by one. So BIP 110, like Michael said, it adds 7 restrictions at the consensus level. Obviously, this means that these are rules that determine which blocks are valid. So this is very different from mempool policy relay rules, which just control what your node passes along the network. So any blocks during this period of BIP 110 of activation, any blocks that violate these 7 consensus rules will be rejected by nodes that are running BIP 110. They're not just filtered by individual nodes. They're actually just blocked and they cannot be added to the blockchain. So the first rule is the output size cap, basically limits OpReturn to 83 bytes. And this goes back to what Bitcoin was a year ago and over 10 years was at just 83 bytes. And this is at a consensus level, limiting OpReturn. So basically what your node can store from a data perspective, not only from the node perspective, but also from a block perspective. If there are any transactions that have OpReturn over 83 bytes will be blocked. And so any monetary transaction of Bitcoin will be accepted. But if you're storing large amounts of data, videos, text, and so on, this basically gets blocked from being added to the blockchain during this 1 year period. Bert, do you have anything to add for this one?
Yeah, I always have a problem with images and videos stored on that. That sounds like you basically have videos and images stored on Bitcoin. Either way, everything is in that sense interpretations of ones and zeros, which I really, really have problems with. And that this comes back to a specific part where letters were sent out to the mining pools, large mining operators by, let's say, Ocean / Luke, with regards to the whole CSAM debate, which we saw before BIP110 actually came about. And the risk here is that this path that we are taking with regards to BIP110 is that we see restrictions on the consensus level, where we also open a box of Pandora with regards to legal framing. When you say, oh, there are people that are running certain hardware that can store information that is illegal and that can be shut down. Now, this can, of course, extend. Now it's OpReturn and some of the other things that Kyle is going to walk through, but it can also extend into other areas where you can think of the fungibility of Bitcoin in and by itself, where we're talking about certain people or certain countries having certain amounts of Bitcoin on addresses where you could go in that direction, which I find very risky in and by itself.
Well, one thing I think is important to mention as part of BIP110 is that any UTXOs before the activation date are grandfathered in, so they're still spendable. But any transactions that want to occur in the future or during that BIP110 period of 1 year, those are going to be blocked by these rules. So if, for example, there is some entity that has one of these UTXOs that, let's call it, would be blocked, or transactions that would be blocked during the 1 year period, if they had the UTXO before the activation height, then that will still be spendable. Going to rule number two, this is the data push and witness element cap of 256 bytes. So this is a pretty big one. This is basically saying that it limits any individual piece of data in the witness, which is primarily where these ordinals and inscriptions were stored, to 256 bytes. And that's more than enough for multi-sig, for any type of legitimate Bitcoin transaction, but not for embedding an image in one continuous piece. And so that goes back to what Bert was saying about the, what are we willing to store on our nodes? And I think one of the main things in the spec of BIP110 is that this is not going to stop spam. It's not going to stop steganography and ways of putting bad stuff on the chain. That's still going to happen. But if I'm running a node, and not only from a legal perspective, because if I don't care about the legality about it, or if I live in a jurisdiction where maybe the laws are more liberal, that might not matter. But just as an ethical and a moral perspective, if I know that I have to store certain data that I don't want to on my node just to download the Bitcoin blockchain so I can validate it myself, that's going to cause people like me and others to not run a node, because I don't want to store that data. I find that abhorrent. And so if that becomes the case where there's this bad data on the chain, let's say images or videos that I don't want to see, or I find are morally not good, and I have to store that to run my own node, that's going to stop people from running it. And that's just from a moral and ethical perspective. If there are jurisdictions that have legal ramifications for holding certain of this data, for example, CSAM, then it could become something where the law could go after you. And obviously, there is no court cases that we've seen in the past about this, but there is data, CSAM data on the chain already. They've done investigations on that, but it's not something that's contiguous in your node. So you would have to use a separate tool to put that together. And now if you in your node, there's contiguous data of this videos or whatever, it becomes a lot more trickier from that perspective.
Yeah, so what I think is very important in what you just explained, the witness data is then basically capped, so it's becoming less wide. So of course, if malicious actors still want to embed a lot of data, they will just cut it into smaller pieces and still, you know, use Bitcoin with regards to using this specific type, but just the smaller chunks. So the real problem is it's very easily circumvented. And the other issue you have here is that you are actually stopping some operators from using some of the functionality that they are using currently. So specifically, for example, Anchor Watch, but also some very advanced features with regards to Taproot Miniscript, where I've personally also worked on, is where, for example, Liana, which is also a wallet that very tech-savvy people might use, is that you can build certain setups where you can obfuscate your key structure. So the key structure is not public. That's the new privacy features that are actually enabled by Taproot. And that you are not revealing all of your signers when you do a transaction. This not only increases privacy, but this also creates less weight in the actual larger multisig transactions. And this is specifically interesting for larger holders that want to be very private about how many keys there actually are and how they transact. And this is all working in practice. And this will not work anymore when Bit110 activates. And that's why some people say this is a very niche scenario. And of course, it's still niche because exactly as when we are testing all these features, there's just a few wallets that are actually capable of doing this. But we expect this to be rolled out more broad. And this will bring a huge privacy increase on holders with large sums, with complex setups in and by itself. So this witness part is, in my opinion, it's debatable and it's questionable if you want to actually do this.
But just to be clear, are you referring to the because you said Miniscript? Are you talking about like the no op if for like the tap leaf construction?
No, just the data itself. So the size when you go through larger setups,
like a larger multi-sig setup.
Yes, correct.
Okay, yeah, that's basically above 8 keys.
Correct.
But anything below that, 7 keys, 3 of 6, 3 of 5, 2 of 3, multi-sig still works. Correct. So that is true. There are some more advanced setups. I think Anchor Watch is one of them using 10 keys, and that would be 243 bytes. That would be above the 256 byte limit that Bit110 would be constraining. But obviously, this is only temporary, and hopefully we can figure out a solution to be able to stop the spam debate without needing these rules for a longer period of time.
Okay. Number three, what do you got, Kyle?
No spending undefined witness versions. Bitcoin has different versions of how witnesses work. Version 0 is SegWit. Version 1 is Taproot. Versions beyond that are undefined and reserved for future upgrades. Right now, they have no rules on their data, meaning they could be abused for unlimited data storage. Bit110 blocks spending from these undefined versions during the temporary period. Any future upgrade would need more than a year of coordination anyway, so this doesn't block anything real. I think that's more of a minor one. I'm not sure, Bert, if you have anything to say about that.
I'll let you finish the list first. That's good.
For rule number 4, no Taproot Annex. The Annex is an extra data field in Taproot transactions with unlimited size, reserved for future use. And so this is blocked since there's no legitimate use for this today. Rule number 5, control block cap. Taproot lets you set up multiple spending conditions organized in a tree structure. So this is basically limiting the conditions for certain complex transactions. So this can be limiting for projects like BitVM, which is working on advanced computation on Bitcoin. But there's no real-world transactions on Bitcoin today of BitVM, at least that I'm aware of. And so that one-year expiry means that limitation would end before BitVM is likely to launch. For rule number 6, we have no op success in Taproot scripts. These are placeholder instructions reserved for future upgrades. No legitimate use today, so those are blocked. And then the last one, rule number 7, I think this one is an interesting one. No op if or op not if in Taproot scripts. So op if is a OpIf lets a script choose between two different code paths based on a condition. This is useful in older Bitcoin scripts, but Taproot was specifically designed to replace it. So in Taproot, each condition gets its own branch in the tree, and only the branch you actually use is revealed on the blockchain. Using OpIf inside a Taproot script is redundant because you're publishing code that never runs, which is exactly what Taproot was built to eliminate. OpIf in Taproot scripts is commonly abused to embed data that gets skipped during execution. Now, I actually put up a PR in the Rust miniscript that got merged by Andrew Polstra. And basically, it adds a fix whereby if you currently use OpIf in a Taproot script, it allows you to compile these conditions into separate branches automatically. So it gives you the same wallet functionality you would have before Bitcoin 10, and allows you to do so where you don't need OpIf. So for any developers that currently use OpIf in their Taproot scripts and they're looking to see how can they continue to have the same functionality during the Bitcoin 10 period, they can just use that that new functionality in the mini script. But those are the seven rules. You have anything to add, Bert?
Yeah, so you mentioned a couple of times these are temporary solutions. And I think it's very important to come back to that it's seen, I think, if you look at it, how it's pushed, how many fast updates we saw when the first BIP 110 docs were starting to be released. There were also some very serious Bitcoiners looking at it. And there was quite some quick iterations there. But most people that are, let's say, on a longer time scale, trying to be as serious as possible with regards to a more than $1 trillion network, don't like to see, you know, temporary solutions that are almost like a hip shoot solution to something that will not kill Bitcoin. I don't know how you look at it, Kyle, but if BIP 110 does not activate, will Bitcoin die in any short term?
No, I don't think so. But I think the use case of Bitcoin as money is going to take a hit from that perspective, because then it says there is a legitimate use case for storing data on nodes. And if you're running an IPFS or something else, some other data storage, decentralized data storage protocol, you can delete or you can remove certain data from that node you're running. But with Bitcoin, you cannot. Every single person in the future will have to store this data that could be morally apprehensible.
And what if we start to use Bitcoin more, as I mentioned a couple of times already?
I certainly don't disagree with that. I mean, I think everyone should be using Bitcoin more, but I don't see how that would affect BIP 110.
But in the short term, as you mentioned, it will not kill Bitcoin. And I think it's very important that we get to a solid solution for the long term.
Right.
And we all need to work on that. And I think, indeed, we both agree that Core is a not very nice path that has been taken there. But also Knots, for sure, as I mentioned before, with a single person that has merge access, is an insane risk, too. So we have to really think
there's
about...
There's a lot to work on, basically. There's a lot of improvements to make all around. And I think... something very telling is that this issue has been around for many years, and only now in December, this BIP 110 was proposed and accepted in the BIPs repo. And we've had, 6 months or more now. And even before the BIP 110 was, the proposal was added into the BIPs repo and accepted, this debate has been going on for far longer than that. And we still don't have anybody else really coming out and saying, this is our solution. We've seen some other node implementations talked about, for example, production ready, although they don't have a client that you can run. There are obviously governance structural issues with Core, as you mentioned, and other people have said the same thing. Same with Knots, with Luke being the only maintainer there. But ultimately, I think at the end of the day, and also the fact that it's temporary, is that this is not the end result. Like, we need to figure out how do we solve these issues. We need to move forward and basically figure out how do we solve this from a long-term perspective? How do we fix these issues? And I think more node implementations are clearly better than just having everyone corralled into Core and then they make a change that everyone has to accept.
I love that you say Corel in the core. So I think it's very important here. There are some other node implementations. You already mentioned production ready, but it's not production ready. And the nice thing is that you actually have LeBitcoin, which has been like under development for over a decade, which looks really, really solid. And we need more people to actually also work on that and focus on that. We need multiple implementations where there's more effort being put in, so that we don't see, you know, the current binary choice of like you either run knots or you run core, but there's nothing else. We would like to see much more than that publicly available and easily accessible for node runners, which will open up basically people being able to participate in the network even more easily. And I think that's the most positive note or node in that sense, because everyone is now getting aware of how important it is to run a node and that you actually can become fully sovereign when you run a node. And that's why I'm wearing this little pin which says node runners will inherit the earth. In the end, if you're not a participant, you are relying on someone else. And that's not what the goal of Bitcoin is. The goal of Bitcoin is to become sovereign. And that's what this whole discussion in the end will also make sure that you all become, because whatever path is being taken, Bitcoin will get stronger and we will see more adoption of Bitcoin through it.
Yeah, one thing I'll add before you go, Michael, is just we're all having this conversation about nodes and all this stuff. But I think what's really important is if you're listening to this and you are not running a node, then you should ask yourself a question of, do you truly have control over what you see on your wallet, for example? And if you're just trusting someone else, then maybe they go core, maybe they go nuts, maybe they have Bitcoin 10, maybe they don't. But you have no say if you don't run your own node. So I think that's really important to come out of this conversation. If you're not running a node, ask yourself, why not? Because that's the whole purpose of Bitcoin, not to trust someone else, not to give them control over your actions.
Yes, completely. I think we can all agree we need more nodes online. If you want to be a sovereign individual, you need to run a node. And hopefully we've given you some takeaways here to consider what you might run. So quick question for you, Kyle. So if you were to frame the objective of BIP 110, do you view it as a solution, a tactic designed to give us more runway to find a solution, or just maybe a year-long period to keep some of the scammers or, you know, spammers, however you want to define them or describe them, away, that, you know, they go chase some other cryptocurrency and, you know, go, you know, dump on their projects or whatever? Or is it some combination of those things?
I think it's a combination of those things. Ultimately, it exists because filters are going to get routed around. And so if we want to figure out a long-term solution, we at least have to cap the potential gap that has now been brought about by V30. So that means we have to do it at a consensus level. Because I think if BIP 110 came out and said, we're going to do this permanently, which again, some skeptics are like, why is it temporary? If it became permanent at the consensus level, I think that would, I mean, we're already having a lot of debate and controversy around BIP 110. But if it was permanent, I think it would be way worse. And I think it would have much less support. But the fact that it is temporary, that it does out or expire, in my head, it's not a permanent solution. It's not the long-term solution, but it is something. Even if it's not perfect, we need something to make a stand that Bitcoin is money. We've been having this conversation for many years, and it seems like nobody wants to listen to us from the core side. And obviously, knots is not the most, from a governance perspective, just like core is, there's issues there, obviously. The idea that a miner gets paid once and then every node operator has to store that data forever is very dangerous, in my opinion. And I think more people need to run nodes. And if we keep trying to make it easier to run nodes, then I think that's a win for Bitcoin. And that's why I believe in that BIP 110 will succeed in the end.
By the way, Barrett, if you want to double down, we want to avoid anything ad hominem, slanderous. But one of your concerns you expressed offline was you've got Luke. sort of sitting at the center of a lot of this. He's the single maintainer for Knots. He's really, he wasn't the, he didn't initially, I don't think, release the PR for BIP 110, but he was noted as a contributor. I'm sure he was heavily involved in that. That's been one of your concerns as well, is just the mechanics sort of underlying the issuance of these PRs and these proposals. Could you maybe touch on that a little bit?
Yeah, I haven't named any person in our current talk, and I like to keep it that way. I think it's best for people to just do deep research on people involved in general with regards to implementations. We've seen a very nice article come about the corruption within Core. It's heavily shared and talked about a lot. But I think the other side should also be heavily investigated and checked upon, because there is also a lot of question marks over there. And then we come back to, let's be conservative, run something conservatively, and let's build on something that actually lasts for the long-term future, because the kids depend on it, Michael.
Perfect. Okay, I'm looking through some of these notes that we have here. What, Kyle, what have we not gotten to, if anything, that you were hoping to discuss?
I think we covered everything. I'm not sure... there was anything else?
I think it seems to me like we've done a pretty good job. I think at the end of the day, what I've really enjoyed about this, guys, is that there's just so much division, tribalism. If you look at X and see the debate unfolding, I think this is hopefully much more educational and constructive for people. Probably a little bit technical. I think you can only keep it high level for so long before you have to get into the weeds a little bit. Tell me if I'm missing anything here. I think the big takeaways are: run a node. You need to be running a node, regardless of implementation. Try to take some of what you've learned listening to this chat and make an informed determination. Go do your own research. Don't trust, verify. And then be ready for this activation period. Make sure you're thoughtful about, should you be sending transactions? You know, depending on what you choose to do, maybe there are some other considerations. Am I missing anything? Like, what do you guys want to make sure that people hear as a result of this episode?
Learn to coin join, not your node, not your code.
I agree with that. And the big one, verify, don't trust. Not even us, not anybody. Do your own research, make your own decision. Don't ever be in a situation where you're like, oh, well, somebody told me, or, oh, I'm going to trust someone else, or maybe I'm not running a node, I'm just going to, you know, have whatever they choose for me. That's like a sheep mentality. And in Bitcoin, we're not sheep. We need to focus on educating yourself, being sovereign, and that means taking action on your own, whether you want to be neutral, whether you want to, whether you're for BIP 110 or against it. At least you can see at the end of the day, I'm making my own decision based off my own interpretation.
Well said. Guys, I think that's a good place to wrap up. Thank you both for doing this. Kyle, I know you in particular put a lot of time into pulling some notes together. And Barrett, I know you were going back and finding lots of resources. So this has been incredibly helpful for me, hopefully helpful for our viewers. And I'm really grateful for both of your time.
Thank you.
Cheers, guys.
Thanks.
And that's a wrap again. Hope you enjoyed this discussion. I thought this was incredibly helpful, very enlightening for me, especially as someone who is not a developer. And hope you learned a lot and are now ready to go run your node and make a determination about how you want to proceed, what implementation you want to run. But again, the most important thing is take self-custody, run a node. If you need help doing that, go to the bitcoinway.com/podcast. You can schedule a free 30-minute consult with a member of our team. Could also help you with online privacy, setting up a privacy phone. We have an awesome Plan B residency option in Panama too. Again, it's thebitcoinway.com/podcast. If you stuck around this long, do me a huge favor, like and subscribe to the channel. We'd really appreciate that. Share it with someone. Anything you could do to help feed the algorithm, we would really, really appreciate. Go follow us on X. We're at @thebitcoinway_. I'm there as well @theothermjordan. And until next time, stay safe, stay sovereign, and remember, the yield on Bitcoin is freedom.